Welcome to Stoma and Continence Conversations from Coloplast Professional. I'm Paul.
And I'm Karen. We know stoma and bowel and bladder issues impact the lives of those that you care for.
We're here to support your educational needs and help you in supporting your patients.
We're talking to fellow healthcare professionals and experts by experience to discuss the latest hot topics in the worlds of stoma, continence care and specialist practice.
Hi, and welcome to this Coloplast Professional podcast. And I am today joined by Professor Craig White. Good morning, Craig.
Morning, Paul.
Could you just give our listeners just a little bit of background about yourself and the sort of topics that we're going to be covering today?
So I'm a clinical psychologist. I've worked in or around the NHS in the UK for close on 30 years this year. Today, I'm going to talk to you a bit about the impact of surgery resulting in the formation of a stoma on confidence, thoughts and feelings about appearance, and the links with that on sexual function and distress, and the interactions between those concepts, and crucially, how as professionals, particularly clinical nurse specialists, might approach their assessments and their support and their interventions for people affected by the issues.
And we know that as nurses, especially with stoma formation and any kind of surgery where we are altering someone's body appearance, that it does have massive emotional and psychological impacts on that individual on so many different levels and so many different aspects of that individual's life. I almost don't know where to start because there is such a multifaceted kind of topics to do. Is there a kind of natural starting point when we're talking about, you know, all of those brilliant topics that you mentioned then?
If we think about even ourselves or people that we know that illness or the requirement for any treatment, particularly surgical treatment, results in a range of psychological concerns. And for some people, that will be relatively self-limiting and they'll experience emotions such as apprehension. They might feel a range of emotions which are part and parcel of the sorts of emotions that we all experience in the course of every day. And there are, of course, other people, perhaps because of a previous history of experiencing more intense or difficult emotional states, who will experience those more intensely or more frequently, or that have a greater impact on their overall quality of life. So I think in beginning to think about these areas, it's useful to think around what I might describe as overall confidence and overall sense of psychological and emotional health and well-being. We know from some of the research that around 1 in 4, 1 to 5, depending on what studies you look at, of people will have more significant difficulties with their emotions and their response to emotions in general. That pretty consistently, looking at the people that some of the listeners to this podcast will care for, it's around 1 in 4 to 1 to 5 of people following surgery resulting in the formation of a stoma that will have those difficulties that are more frequent, more intense, and start to have an impact on their overall quality of life. Some of the statistics are quite useful. I know that working as a clinician and working with other clinical nurse specialists and surgeons over the years, that sometimes that's quite helpful to think about, you know, statistics of the 1 in X or 1 in Y, because again, it can help when you're interacting with somebody, assessing them, listening to them, providing them with care, advice, support, and intervention, to be thinking, is this person saying and responding to me in a way that makes me think they're in that bracket? So in this area, some of the research fairly consistently over the years would say that 1 in 2 people, so 50% of people following this form of surgery, will say that they experience a feeling, a loss of control. Almost 1 in 2, 50% of people will talk about the stoma ruling their life in some way at some time. And again, as much as 1 in 2, 50% of people will be aware that their sense of self-confidence is diminished. Now, again, if we go back to that previous statistic around most people. This is an inverted commas normal part of adjusting to everything that this involves. But again, it can be helpful to start to think about, am I hearing, am I experiencing in this interaction and providing care something that feels part of the process of adjustment? Or could this be something that's not self-limiting? Fortunately for most people, these emotions resolve through support. But it's useful sometimes to think about, you know, this is now a few weeks that this person's been talking about not feeling complete, or the word control keeps coming up around loss of control. And that's where we might start to be thinking around it. Is this something where I might need to set aside some more time to sensitively explore the impact through some examples? That may often then be a way of exploring some of the other related concepts around specific concerns relating to appearance, or particular concerns around sexual functioning, for example.
Discussing sex and sexuality can be concerning for both the practitioner and for the ostomate. Would you mind just elaborating on these concerns a little bit more for me?
The National Survey of Sexual Attitudes and Lifestyles, which takes place every few years, reported that 60% of people report that they'd had sexual intercourse recently, and 60% of people said they were satisfied with sex and intimacy in their life. So that's the general population. So from a starting point, if you're 4 out of 10 people haven't been intimate or had sexual intercourse recently, and 4 out of 10 people are not satisfied with that. And that's before you factor in appearance-altering surgery or the impacts of illness or adjustment following surgery. When we start to look at people with any health condition that affected their sex life in the past year, 1 in 6 people are saying that their health condition has had an impact. Crucially, of those people, and this is where the statistics are slightly different, 18% of women will say they'd sought help or advice from a healthcare professional. Interestingly, and maybe counterintuitively, 24% of men had sought advice from a healthcare professional. So again, thinking about, even if you take out the impact of stoma surgery and all that comes with that in terms of the requirements to learn about ostomy care and stoma care routines, there's going to be a significant proportion of people already where their pre-existing conditions or other conditions that they have are going to be having an impact on that dimension of their life. But when we start to then think about the impact of the stoma surgery specifically, 1 in 2 people will talk about having less sexual desire as a result or following the surgery. Again, as many as 20% of people will report worry that something awkward or unwanted are the words that are often used. So something awkward or unwanted is going to happen during sex and intimacy. It's specifically related to the stoma, its impact or its functioning. 30% of people feeling dirty and unclean at some point. So there's something about, as professionals, being able through CPD or just taking some time to think about this and think, okay, these are the generic statistics. Let's think about the people that I see. If on reflecting about that, there's not around, you know, 1 in 5 people where you find you're having to speak to them about these issues, it might be a point for reflection around, are my assessments sensitive enough? There's work suggesting that people are generally dissatisfied, not just healthcare professionals in general, but with stoma care nurses. They're generally dissatisfied with the amount of information or the nature of the information that they receive about sex and intimacy. So using some of these general statistics to perhaps reflect and think, you know, am I seeing about 20% of my caseload, where over the course of my contact, we're exploring these issues? And if that's not the case, you might want to think, why might that be?
Do you know what? That's a really, really interesting point. Because as you were talking, as you were going through those statistics, I was thinking to myself, you know, I see on average, if I'm doing home visits, I have on average 5 to 6 home visits per day. And like you said, doing that little bit of self-reflection, thinking back, and I'm thinking, potentially, I'm only really having discussions on sexuality, sexual health, specifically, potentially only 1 in 10 patients where I'm having those conversations. Body image, confidence, and concerns of leakage, yeah, I'm probably having 1 in 4, 1 in 5 kind of things. I always try to be curious, and it's that curiosity in nursing that we drive for. And that's not always necessarily just about the psychological aspects of nursing, but every time we do an investigation with a patient, it's you're doing it because you're curious of what those blood, you know, their blood pressure is, what is their pulse, what are their blood results. And I think sometimes almost, and again, it'd be interesting to get your view on that, is as a profession, do we need to kind of almost take that concept of being curious and exploring the physical and say, well, why aren't I actually being more curious about the psychological, being more curious about the emotional psychological issues that this patient may be experiencing? I'm hopefully I'm not doing too many people injustice, because I know we pride ourselves on doing it. But as you said, are we doing it enough when you look at those statistics?
Yeah, so as human beings, we're inherently subject to bias, because that's just the nature of the way our minds and brains have developed. So we're as individuals, the work or the impact of it as imagined might not necessarily be completely concordant with the work as experienced by the people that we care for. So there's definitely something around self-reflection, potentially something about how in interactions with people we seek feedback. Some people don't always feel comfortable with this, but having quick ways of seeking feedback around, based on the time we spent today, where 10 is, we've covered everything that is currently a concern or an issue in your life, and 0 is, we're nowhere near it. Where would you say we are? Increasingly, particularly in cancer care settings, there's an emphasis on holistic needs assessment tools, which provide a way of prompting, usually through some form of paper-based intervention. So I have here a list of concerns that people often report following colorectal surgery. I wonder if you could take a moment to tell me if any of these have been experienced by you. So there's something about being aware that we're, as human beings and as professionals, our own self-assessment of how we approach these things, or the extent to which we cover these issues or do so in a way that helps people to feel comfortable about broaching issues that we haven't raised, but is probably the starting point. In terms of curiosity and exploration of experiences, one of the things that I think clinical nurse specialists I've worked with have found helpful is to pause and think about peristomal skin or post-operative concerns or generic physical health indicators that they're very comfortable with, is to talk to them about, okay, you're assessing that with something in mind. If I use skin as an example, you know how things should be looking at this point. You know, if it's not looking like that, what might be the contributors and what might be some of the interventions that you can offer. So there is a process already happening in terms of decision making and understanding what people are saying, what nursing staff are observing, and then on the basis of that, deciding what further information to collect and what the options might be. And although people, for a whole variety of reasons that we might talk about in terms of custom and practice and the culture of organisations, think that there's something mysteriously different about emotions, thoughts about ourselves, thoughts about sex and intimacy, previous experiences, that there's some sort of mysterious, different clinical reasoning process, there isn't. So I guess, and you'll know much more about this than me, Paul, but I guess, you know, you'll know, professionals working in this area will know, X percent of people are going to have this sort of problem with the peristomal skin. And therefore, at this point, this is what I'd be looking out for. These are the sorts of things that I would observe. These are the sorts of things that people would say. Similarly, we know that there'll be a proportion of people who will experience concerns that the stoma is ruling their life, that they're no longer complete, or that they're not in control. And that will persist, and it will continue to have a negative impact on their overall emotional and psychological health and well-being. So again, just as you might be looking for patterns of adjustment post-surgery in terms of skincare or the appliance, it really isn't any different in terms of that curiosity and that exploration. And it may be, particularly if you look at some of the literature around where people are saying they're generally not satisfied the way we as healthcare professionals approach these issues, it may be being open around that and saying, would it be okay if I provide some information about what in general terms we know some people experience, so that I can check if that's something A, that you've experienced or thought about, and B, is it something that you would be happy for me to explore a bit more as part of providing care and support to you? I think also, fortunately, most of the social concerns relating to confidence or appearance or sex and intimacy will improve over time. And most of the research that exists in this area, there's a fairly consistent theme around concerns about confidence, appearance, control, sex and intimacy will show a trajectory of improvement over time as part of that process of adjustment and as a result of the supportive care that stoma care nurses and other members of the team provide.
I love how you've made that connection, and it really does resonate with me. And again, I'm so pleased that you've compared it to the peristomal skin, where we know as clinical nurse specialists, you know, there are, you know, we always talk about prevention over cure. And it's that thing of if we see X, that we are more than likely going to do Y. You know, there is this natural progression. And when we're communicating and we're using our past experiences, and you mentioned bias and potential unconscious bias then, which I'm consciously aware of my unconscious bias, which I think is, it takes a lot of concentration to be consciously aware of your unconscious bias. But it's just that thing of being able to say, you don't need to know the answer. We are not psychologists, we're not psychiatrists, we're not trained counselors, but what we are is very, very good at identifying problems, picking up these issues, and not being afraid to actually say where our limitations are. Thank you so much for opening up to me about that. I can see that that is, it's really affecting you and your life. It's a little bit out of my knowledge base, but what I can do is, I know if it's with your permission, I'd like to refer you on to X, Y, and Z.
I think also listening to some of what you said reminds me of so often being in meetings, particularly when I was line managed by a very senior nurse in a, what in England would be an NHS trust, in Scotland, one of the NHS boards, where the team of colleagues said that they had decided that after a few months, they were going to say that I was now an honorary nurse, because as the only non-registrant with the NMC in the room, they felt that they had developed relationships and trust with me that they could say that. So I feel I have a good understanding and excellent relationships with nurses.
That's a badge of honour. You know that, don't you? That is a very, very high honour that they have bestowed on you. Honorary nurse, you know, you can take your OBEs and your MBEs. They're given away. Honorary nurse status.
I feel because of that, I can say what I'm about to say. Nurses are very good at problem solving. And often that's entirely appropriate where there's a clinical issue or a problem for which they know a number of solutions to, or they're able to advocate as part of the wider team, or educate or advocate, as I say, with junior medical staff, surgeons and others, to, in inverted commas, solve the problem. That can create a number of difficulties when it comes to psychological care, where the solution, in inverted commas again, is perhaps not immediately apparent during the conversation. Now, partly that's because our own human reaction to another human being's distress or emotional pain, and what that stirs in us. In my experience, even people who have the most severe and incapacitating difficulties in relation to their mood or their functioning, people know the answers to their own challenges, difficulties, pain, distress. They may not know that, they may not see that clearly, but one of the metaphors that I think is perhaps useful in this area, and it potentially moves us from that narrative around, you know, I'm not sure what to ask you about that, I'm concerned about this, I could refer you on to somebody else. Don't underestimate the impact of a conversation with somebody, or the impact of somebody hearing themselves respond to what you've asked them, because that process of having to put into words means that the various neural connections that are required for the words to come out of someone's mouth to describe the links between an emotion, an experience, and how elements of that matter or of concern, that in itself is likely to be helpful as part of a process of adjustment. And in fact, being able to do that will sometimes unlock the innate ability that we all have to reorganize when there's a difficulty during the course of any personal event or occurrence, or even in the course of a professional working day. We will encounter tens of unanticipated interruptions, responses from colleagues. For the most part, we reorganize what we were thinking, how we were feeling at the time, and how we're going to respond. And I guess one metaphor that's sometimes useful, if we think about the care and intervention that follows a fracture. So fracture will be placed in a plaster cast. And what does that do? Well, it creates the environment for the fracture to heal. And sometimes talking with and working with nurses and other clinicians, it's encouraging them to see that the conversation, the openness to explore, to be curious, to be challenged, to seek feedback, to say things like, I've been listening to a podcast recently and I was struck by the fact that one in two people talk about feeling less sexual desire, or 3 in 10 people feeling dirty or unclean at some point during sex and intimacy. Would it be okay if I ask you some questions about that? So being able to see that, creating the conditions where that open, curious dialogue can take place, is the psychological equivalent of the plaster cast for a fracture. That conversation, which again, if I go back to reflections with nurses I've worked with, they might seek to minimize the impact of that because they don't see themselves as doing something to solving a problem, and therefore leave the interaction thinking they haven't done very much. Some years ago now, I worked with a group of clinical nurse specialists in cancer and palliative care, where they all had supervision arrangements in place with me as part of a wider network of supportive and psychological care that we provided. And often you would be saying, have you paused to think about whether this person has ever put into words with anyone else in the team the extent of their distress and confusion and fear about what might happen to their relationship because of what's happened this past fortnight? And you could almost see them thinking, oh, I hadn't thought about that before. And often it was saying, well, do not underestimate the fact that A, that person has probably not articulated that before. And if they have, it's not in the context of you being open, curious, non-judgmental, compassionate, and crucially, creating the conditions for them to follow that up if they wish. One of the themes that's occurring to me as we speak about some of these issues is, again, I suppose, the need to remember that events unrelated to the disease that resulted in stoma surgery are also likely to be crucial. And sometimes, because of well-rehearsed routines, familiarity with certain areas, that there can be a risk to immediately go to stoma-related concerns, issues, assessments. when in fact it may be that the issues that are being discussed have their origins in a completely different life experience, clinical condition, family event, or circumstance, and could have been around for years. And so it's sometimes important to pause and think about the context and the person and the history. And again, thinking of some conversations with nurses, they would be particularly distressed because they would say, I can't make sense of this. I've asked all the things I usually would ask, or things that people have said would be helpful. And then when you open the conversation up and say, well, have you asked about whether this is something that's occurred previous to you being in touch with them? Or, and then sometimes they come back to supervision and say, oh, they've actually been referred to 6 other people over the past 20 years with the similar difficulties. So you can then say, okay, well, how does that impact upon what you said last time about your own feelings of not being able to be helpful, given that it looks like 6 other people over 20 years have struggled with this? Now, that's not to say you won't be able to approach this from a different perspective, and particularly when we start to think about the area of sex and intimacy, the statistics would suggest that 1 in 10 women have experienced what's referred to often as non-volitional sexual encounters, so, you know, unwanted sexual experiences. So again, nurses and professionals listening to this, it's not like that women who have surgery resulting in the formation of a stoma are somehow exempt from this. So the starting point is, as women, 1 in 10 of the people on your caseload are likely to have had an unwanted sexual experience. Being able to pause, reflect, and think about that and say, okay, do I ask questions, or do I approach this in a way that thinks that this person in front of me may be that 1 in 10 statistic? And I guess it goes back to that principle, which is so resonant with the core professional values of the nursing profession, around the person at the center of the interaction, of the provision of care and of the assessment. And I guess it's just being aware and thinking of ourselves, our personhood is more than the reason we're in contact with the health system, or a particular surgical procedure we've had, or a home visit that we're receiving that day. And sometimes expanding around that can really create the conditions for people to have a completely different interaction.
Today, we've covered a vast amount of information with a lot of things to take home and reflect upon. One of the key takeaways for me has been all about being curious and giving our patients the opportunity to talk in a safe and open environment. Because stomaformation can have such wide-reaching emotional and psychological effects on an individual, we're actually going to be lucky enough to be hearing from Professor White in future podcasts, so watch this space.
Stoma and Continence Conversations is brought to you by Coloplast Professional. To learn more, visit coloplastprofessional.co.uk.